I love trauma. Loves it.
Any hot antidepressant medication, you just come right through and sponsor me.
Mm.
Okay, Ben. This is Ben.
Hi, everyone.
Absolute wretched bitch.
Horrible.
And we met at the Old Vic.
No, I don't want the truth out there. Okay, we met at Paris Fashion Week. I was walking. It was my first show. That's the showbiz story.
That's what really happened. The fantasy is that we were selling ice cream to trolls at the Old Vic.
It was such a dark time for us both.
What even was that?
I think it was 2019, because I really, I'm not just saying this for the pod, I really mean it, dear listeners. I really remember seeing you for the first time, because I had been working front of house at the Old Vic. That's what we're talking about. And I'd been working there for about 6 months, and you had been working there previously, but I think you must have been in Berlin, because you came back like 6 months into like my tenure there, and you rocked up like an absolute rock star. And like, I think it was back in the day when we were like wearing very specific bits of uniform, and you were so against the uniform. You literally rocked up. I think you're wearing like those amazing tartan trousers you have, this like messy belt, and this like shirt that had holes in, and you looked so chic. And our manager at the time looked absolutely horrified, and you just didn't give a fuck. And I was really impressed.
Paris Fashion Week.
That does sound like Paris Fashion
Week. Can I just
say,
I bet I thought I looked so neat and tidy. It doesn't matter how smart I try and look. Yeah. It cannot happen.
No, I think it's your natural sort of energy. It's kind of, and it's good. It's like a little bit messy.
Messy energy.
A little bit dirty. Do you know what I mean? But that's what the Parisians love, which is why we circle back to Fashion Week. Thank you, everyone.
So, this is absolutely not the right... Do you know what? Talk about messy. This is it, hun. Can I tell you, I thought I was being so organized. My list, I've got...
Look at your book.
Yeah, hun. It's the same questions written out in different orders, because my dyslexia will not allow me to just write it out neatly once.
We're all lost.
We met working on front... Oh, my God. Even that was a struggle. We met walking in Paris Fashion Week, and I'll translate that for the listeners, selling ice creams front of house at the Old Vic.
Yeah.
Give me a brief intro. Did you go to National Youth Theatre?
I did go to National Youth Theatre. That's where I trained as an actor. I think that was back in like 2014. So I'd just done my A-levels. So I was 18 at the time. And then I trained as a writer, as a playwright. I did the writer's programme at Soho Theatre in 2017, 2018.
Okay, because you can't just be an actor now, girls.
I have to be everything. You've got to hustle.
You've got to know how to sell ice creams. You've got to know how to sell programs. You need to know the cast that will not speak to you by first name terms. You need to know how to show people where to sit.
You've also got to be really hard work. You've also got to be a real nasty piece of work.
And that's on period B.
To be respected, but don't be liked, girls.
Come in
don't
looking
be liked.
Disheveled. Can I just say, though, honestly, probably did think I looked real together.
No,
that
you
day.
Did look nice. Like, when I say you looked messy in a very fashion way. It wasn't like, oh, that bitch looks homeless. Nothing wrong with being homeless either. It was more like, oh, no, you just look
that is my
a supermodel. You look like a supermodel.
I'll take
you know
it.
That.
Do you have a funny memory from, like, National Youth Theatre or the Woodbury Jewish College for Women in Birmingham?
I loved it there so much at Woodbury. Thank you, girlies, if you're listening.
My gorgeous girlies.
Why is that so timeless? Hello, my gorgeous girlies. I really miss the Cock Destroyers. In terms of NYT, there are times when, like, you're living in London, you've all descended on London as, like, these annoying young actors that you are.
You see them at every fucking drama school.
Yeah.
Millie, Tilly, Flavia.
I know.
Oh, my God, you did the Recall for Guilt. Shut up.
Millie and Flavia are Millie. Such cunts. But I'm one of them. I can't hate them because I'm that person. I'm that girl.
I remember auditioning for drama school, and I was always so nervous that I think I came across as very standoffish and shy.
Yeah.
And it would always be those kids whipping up a tornado.
Yeah.
Bitch.
But I think that's like one of the worst things about... the worst, that sounds like really intense. But no, I think it is pretty annoying to be around when you're around those kinds of people at all ages who feel so cliquey, because it just feels like reminiscent of like school and stuff like that. And those people are just as insecure as you are. Do you know what I mean? That's the reason why they're going, oh my God.
I'm the opposite. Like, looking like I hate everyone.
Yeah, no.
Because I really do get nervous.
I really do. It's just my nerves. I think as I've gotten older, my energy gets very outer. And it's like, okay, I've got to put on a show in this like little room that we're in. You know what I mean? I wish I could be like you in a sense where I could just... And I think I'm getting better at it just to be a bit more... contained, you know, a bit more.
I'm not saying that I'm not the annoying girl as well, because I have my times.
You do have that time.
I have my times.
You are intolerable when you're doing
And you know what? I'll give you that. I am probably worse than anyone else I'm talking about.
Do you think? Yeah. I think you get the balance just right.
Do you know what? I'm so glad you're on this podcast
Thank
today.
Thank you.
But no, sorry. Tell me, National Youth Theatre.
Yeah, the main funny stories that pop out to me was like being just like queen of the night. Do you know what I mean? Like my flat where... me and my friends, who were, you know, my co-NYTers, where we lived at the time, we were just so... Looking back, you know, you look back on your 18-year-old self and you're like, you were fucking mad. Really intense. Like, we'd just drink so much.
Oh, really? Was she a drinker?
Yeah, a massive drinker. And, like, super... Like, if I was... Thing is, I don't know, because we were all so young, it was just fun, but taking off clothes... dancing in kitchens.
Keely, put down that fucking bottle. Because I am going to tell you twice, darling.
I wish you'd been there. So you know what I mean?
When you were 18, I don't know what I was doing.
It's a big age difference.
What I was living, you know, what job she had.
It's so funny. I on my phone, like these, and this never happens to me because I never like looking back sometimes because it freaks me out. But these photos from that year of being 18 at National Youth Theatre popped up and it was so... lovely, all these just like young annoying actors who had found each other for the first time just getting really pissed and really obnoxious.
That must be nice though if you've moved out of like
Coventry.
Where are you from?
I'm just outside of Birmingham, a really teeny tiny village called Alfkirk. If this makes its way onto my Wikipedia page, I'm gonna be so angry with the fans.
But yeah, it must be so nice if you come to London and you really do find like other actors that are equally as annoying and
it's game changing though, you know, and when you've got people who are celebrating your annoyingness and your obnoxiousness, like that is a pretty fucking powerful thing. The work you have to do later on in life is like, oh, I don't need to be this annoying. I don't have to take up this much space to get people to like me. Do you know
it
what I mean?
It probably is a release though when maybe you're bullied when you're younger because if you're slightly different.
Like us, because we are gay. Don't know whether you knew that, the public, but I've just outed Joe on the podcast.
Do not speak for me, young woman. So I think it probably is like amazing then when you do find your little tribe.
It is when you like, I don't think you can underestimate. And I think like everyone, no matter how you identify, knows what it is to like just be young and it to be really fucking tough and really traumatic. This is performer trauma, guys. Like when you have come from that shitty childhood and you find yourself in one of the most exciting cities in the world, you feel like Carrie Bradshaw. Your life is just beginning. It is so fucking incredible. It is really exciting.
I love that. And now we're going to take a real left.
I love that.
To the worst normal job that you've had. I want Debenhams to be shut down.
I was always in supermarkets, which I think is very me.
Do you know what? There is a sitcom in that.
No, there really is. But you know what? When I worked at Sainsbury's in Longbridge, which is on the outskirts of Birmingham, I loved that job. It was so... Honestly, the people, particularly the women I worked with, it was just hun central. It was so gorgeous and so beautiful. Like, it wasn't the dream job, obviously. I'm very glad I left and, like, you know, lived my life. But... it wasn't that bad. The worst job was handing out free magazines to people outside tube stations. It was with this awful company and it was grim. And it was really quite soul destroying when you're outside in the cold in December for 3.5 hours and no one is giving you the time of day. Like you literally can't pay people to take what you want.
I did a job like that. Do you remember the London paper? I used to hand that out, hun.
It's hard. It's really hard. Like, that was hard. And also, you've got, like, these horrific vultures who are somewhat managers who are, like, pushing you to be out there. And it's obviously, it's, like, horrifically paid and you're doing it because you need, you know, money to eat and stuff like that. that was hard. And I just kept lying to them. I kept lying that I couldn't come in because I was, like, doing filming for, like, a non-existent acting job. Because
we were at Paris Fashion Week.
No, but we were. I really couldn't bear that that was my reality. Getting fired was the best thing that ever happened. It was wonderful.
You know, I joked about this, saying that I got fired from every job. Mm. Actually, apart from the Old Vic.
Yeah.
I genuinely did like a lot of the people that worked
totally.
There.
Totally. And like, you know, it was bearable. You know, you could get through it. It wasn't like soul destroying like I mean, some jobs can
be. It depended on the show as well.
Totally. I mean, there is some shit going on there.
For those people who are the punters of the Vic, just remember that the people that you're being mean to are trying to be actors. We are trying to make our way in the world.
You know.
We're not there just to be taught to you like shit.
I think those are the jobs that really stick out to me as being bad, though. The ones that almost strip you of your humanity. And that is quite a horrible thing to contend with.
What is the worst advice you've ever been given?
Oh, I think the worst advice, this is a bit deep, so strap yourselves in, but it was from an acting teacher who shall remain nameless. He said I needed to lower my voice, and he did it in front of everyone.
Do you know what? A voice teacher at my school said that I sounded too nasal.
Ugh.
I was like, hun...
Which is coded. It's microaggressive.
Well,
it's
because
coded.
Of my sexuality.
Exactly.
And then he told me to rethink the way that I dress, and I was like, it's not like I'm going to come in as a footballer.
And also, we work in the gayest, campest industry.
He was straight
alive.
As well.
Of course, well, they all are. My teacher was a straight male who said that to me.
Yeah.
And it, like, it really stuck with me. And I think for about 6 months, I really went on, like, a mission to, like, meet with, like, my voice teachers, like, one-on-one to be like, okay, I need to lower my voice. I need to, like,
isn't
change
that nuts?
It. Horrible.
It's an integral part of you.
Horrible.
The way that you look, the way you present yourself, the way that you sound. Yeah. And then when someone's saying, change
no, you
that.
Need to change that. Yeah. And that is a fundamental thing. And also, I would say pretty impossible. And even if you were successful in that, like so stifling and so awful. I really had a wonderful voice teacher who basically very kindly and kind of facilitated the situation really well to be like, we're not going to do that. You don't need to change
amazing.
Your voice. What you can do more, which is the same for everyone, is like learn how to support your voice and ground it with a good level of breath. She didn't go anywhere near changing tone and pitch because she was a wonderful woman who I loved. But yeah, and I'm so glad that I had her because I really worry what, I mean, how old was I? Like 19 or 20? I really worry what I could have spiraled into, that horrific internalized homophobia, which is so prevalent in so many gay male actors, I think, out there.
Yes. And also
just
the casting world. You see
oh
as
my
well.
God, it's there. Yeah.
Even
it's
if
all
they're
there.
Gay, they're somehow homophobic and they don't like
totally.
If you're a bit flamboyant.
Completely.
It, like,
oh yeah,
all...
because it's got to be palatable. You can be gay, you can be queer, but you've got to be, you know, palatable. I think it's that. You're so right. It's not even like just a training perspective. It's out there like in the biz, and it's really soul destroying. And I think that is partly one of the reasons why I then went on to write, because I was like, I don't want to transform. I don't want to like just like take all these different parts of me away, because if there's not an industry that's going to be able to cater to me, then I'm just going to have to do a lot more
and
of
also,
my own back.
People would want to see you on stage.
Oh my God.
You know what I mean? You're such an interesting, colourful person.
Thank you. I agree.
I don't want to see a dulled down version of you or a version of you that's pretending to be like Tom Holland.
Well, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, quite. I agree with you because my favourite performers, my favourite artists, my favourite work is stuff that is so rooted in authenticity, that artist being fucking real and fucking excellent in their own specific way. And I think my heart and my gut knew that before my actual brain did. And I'm really glad they knew that because, by the age of like 21, 22, I was like, something's got to change. I can't shoehorn myself into this box, into this very specific actor box. And I think so much of that has to do with, the industry's expectation of what it means to be a man, what a man looks like, what a man sounds like, gay, straight, whatever, you've got to be packaged in a certain way. And if you are different, then you're ridiculed. And I just didn't want to subscribe
it's
to that.
It's funny as well, because if you think about even a few years ago, the only famous people that were gay, I'm talking about when we were growing up, were not necessarily people that you'd find sexy. It was, you know, Dale Winton, Barrymore.
Yeah.
almost just as clowns.
Yeah, and their sexuality was almost like taken away from them. Yeah. Or even like, oh my God, look at how they're sort of leaning into their gayness and queerness and all the ways that you possibly can. Like, that just wasn't presented to us as kids growing up. And honestly, like, I think it's out there a bit with certain public figures, but, you know, there's not a lot of them, really.
No. There's so much gay baiting, which I find so fucking frustrating.
Me too.
I mean, I'm like, you are not a representation of my queerness or anyone that I know or any struggle or any minority. You're just, you know, I hate to say it, but another white privileged.
I wish that Billy Porter would get the same attention that Harry Styles gets. Do you know what I mean?
And also, like, 20 years ago.
Right.
So, what is your most awkward agent meeting?
I do remember meeting an acting agent quite a while ago, like quite early on. And she was just so old school, but also quite unlegit at the same time. Just like meeting her at the South Bank Centre. She was like this person from like an episode of Ab Fab where she just talked about the biz and how like any job is a great job. And yeah, maybe perhaps it wasn't awkward, but it was just like quite stale and just quite sad.
It's funny, isn't it? Because a lot of the time when they're maybe not legit, like you said, I think they pretend to be how they think an agent would be.
Completely.
Not hand, be real.
Be real and stop peacocking. Like you're just like saying soundbite after soundbite. Mm-hmm. And I worked with her for about like 4 months, I think. And listener, I did fire her because she was horrific.
What's your funniest audition?
I don't know. No, it is funny, but funny in a nice way.
It can be horrific or traumatizing.
I don't think I
just want you to be triggered.
Horrific. You want me on the floor.
I want you on the floor.
Sobbing. I don't know if I... You know what? I am that bitch. I don't actually think I've got like a traumatic audition story.
That's
because
okay.
I am gifted. But I think like... Yeah, when I did my first ever audition for National Youth Theatre, it was with a wonderful, wonderful man called Mike Breyer. And there was just like lots of similarities. And I love Mike to this day. He's about 10 years older than me. He comes from literally the same part of the Midlands as me. He's gay. I think he's a bit of a hero. And when he auditioned me, I think it was just the first time I'd been super duper real and authentic with a gay man in real life. Do you know what I mean?
Really?
And just like, well, yeah, because where I came from as well as a child, like growing up, I didn't know any gay people, you know? There was no one gay, like really in my life, especially like older people. Mm. So I remember he was like redirecting this like Shakespeare speech that I was doing, and like I was getting it, but it was also really tricky. And then like I was still trying to do it, and I just stopped in the middle of the speech, and I just like slapped my thighs and was just like, I can't do it. And like he just laughed his head off, and it was a really beautiful moment. And we talked about it like years afterwards, and he said like, I knew in that moment that, you know, you were an actor I want to work with because of that sense of humor, because of that, just like that realness in the moment. Like, I knew I could work with you, because I think that's a really important thing. It's like, it's, you know, in any audition, I think there's that pressure in all of us to be like, oh, I've got to show that I'm good enough. And it's not about that. It's showing, especially when like I've been on the other side of the table auditioning people, it's about, can I work with this person? There are loads of talented actors out there. There's loads of them, but there aren't, you know, you can't work with all of them because some of them are absolute nightmares. So I think in terms of, a funny audition, I think that was it for all the right reasons.
So what's your most hideous creative job?
The worst acting jobs I ever did.
Give it to me.
I played Captain Hook and, wait for it, Nana the dog. In a production of Peter Pan, which was a touring school's pantomime. So it was one of those jobs where, like, you know, you bring your set with you, you're driving the van and all of that jazz. But the worst, it was bad, it was bleak. But also when I was portraying Nana the dog, I had to wear a life-size dog suit. And I had to do like choreo in the dog costume. And it was hard. One of the performances, I'll always remember, it was in Basingstoke on a Saturday, and I was coming down with neurovirus, and I was so ill and also
That's
quite
so
hungover.
Do you know? That is so a bit of you. She's just dragging in neurovirus with her.
And I retched on stage, like during like Captain Hook's big finale fight scene. That was bad.
When you're in the second year at RADA, you have to do a Shakespeare Schools tour. Someone in our year was doing Romeo or some shit.
Right.
And he did this monologue, died or something.
Classic,
might have just died, might have just killed someone on the floor. And one of the kids went to him, "You're gay."
You're gay.
So what was the last book, exhibition, film, play that you saw that you liked?
I have just finished Minnie Driver's book. Have you heard of it? It's called Managing Expectations. It's like, it is.
Did I co-write it with her?
You did. You told her, you know what, hun, it's fucking bleak out.
Minnie, I'm going to need you over.
Now. Love you, girly.
So
but no, seriously, it's kind of like a memoir, but it's more like a collection of essays from like different points in her life where the whole premise is like, she wanted life to go a certain way and it didn't go a certain way. But then like this wonderful thing eventually happened. It's about like serendipity in life and how things do have a way of like working out when it really feels like it's not going to work out. Like, she writes so beautifully. And film wise, honestly, not just saying it, Jennifer Lopez's halftime documentary on Netflix. I'm not joking, guys. I cried from about 20 minutes in onwards to the end of the film.
Can I just add, I did think that they should have stopped saying, "You're going to get an Oscar, you're going to get an Oscar."
Oh my God. Again, to quote Minnie Driver, manage expectations.
Manage your expectations.
Right? Although I have to say, she should have got the Academy Award nomination for Hustlers. I thought it was a great performance.
Okay.
That last monologue, when she's like, the whole of America is like a strip club, that is hashtag Oscar worthy.
I liked Cardi B in that film.
Did you like Cardi B in that film? I didn't. I felt like she didn't know where she was, which is fine because like she's busy.
I relate to that. But having told that I have to move 4 days ago, I relate to that. So do you have a beauty tip?
There's a thing for my curly haired sisters out there. I have now gotten into the habit of always sleeping in a silk hair scarf.
What's your funniest rehearsal room memory?
I sometimes hate rehearsals because I find them really quite intense. Like, I find the pressure of them, and some of that pressure is probably coming from me. I did a one-person play that I wrote and performed recently. It was called Blowhole. Gay man in his, like, early 20s, desperately trying to find connection and intimacy in a city, London, that feels, like, quite devoid of connection and intimacy. It's about unrequited love. It's about when you want, something deeper and something really real, something really exciting, but it feels like the community that you're a part of and the life that you're living isn't able to sort of give that to you. And to answer your question, my director, Tom Wright, we're awful together. Like, we're really naughty.
Oh,
we're really cheeky.
Naughty.
Yeah. And I think every rehearsal for that play, even the ones that were trickier, because, you know, doing a one-person play is really fucking tough. It's really hard work. It's really exhilarating. It's the most exhilarating thing you'll ever do. Come on, honey, get out there. It is the most exhilarating thing you'll ever do when you perform it. But it's really hard. But the way we would laugh and the way, and that's part of it. Like, when you're doing a one-person play, that's when you really need to bond with your director, with your creative team. Yeah, it's super daunting.
And it was on at the Soho Theatre.
Yeah, we went to Pleasant and then we transferred to Soho earlier this year.
Well done.
It was really lovely.
Do you think it will come back?
I think it will come back.
Okay.
Think Chromatica Ball. Thank you, everyone. But no, I think it will happen again. The landscape of queer stories, it's getting better. It's better than it has been, but I don't think it's good enough. I don't think it's as varied enough as it should be, so.
And does she have any superstitions?
You know what? I don't know whether this answers the question, but, like, before I go on stage, I do, like, hibernate in the dressing room and I do put on super-duper emotional music and I do sort of have a cry every single time before I go on stage and I do sort of think of guardian angels and I sort of just, like, talk to them and think with them and, like, sit with them in my own special way.
Well, there's medication for that.
I'm a little bit kooky. That's a big superstition of mine. Like, I really have to just, like, think of certain people who aren't in this life anymore, have a cry, and I'm ready to do it.
Really?
I'm ready to go on.
So what advice do you have to people having a shite time at the moment, whether it's at NYT, in the supermarket, writing their own play even? How are we going to get out of that, hun?
I don't know how you're going to get out of it. I'm not going to lie. Because I think the number
time,
and that kind of fits in with what came to mind for me is, like, I think you have to sit in it. I think you have to really sit in it and sit in the shit. I think, like, depending on what it is, I think therapy can go a long way.
Yes,
I think
that's
it can
true.
Like, I think it's been the gift of my life, sort of doing proper psychotherapy.
So what's the funniest thing to happen to you on stage? Did anything happen during your one-person show?
You know what? Yeah, it did. He plays quite honest and frank when it comes to stuff about sex. When, like, you have an audience member or audience members who, like, feel so compelled to laugh in a certain way, and certain laughs, like, you can just tell, like, you relate to this joke about anal sex, and that's really lovely. Do you know what I mean? And just, like, and again, like, and then that's a really powerful thing about a one-person play, because it really feels like that audience becomes the second character. It feels really fucking cool. When
so yours
shit
were,
like that
your worst moment on stage is making someone relate to anal sex.
You know what I mean?
And I love you for that.
I love that.
I wish I could relate
it's
to
it. It's really
it.
Special.
Unfortunately, TikTok. Anyway, I'm going to quickly get a speed round of my questions from inside the Actors Studio. What's your favourite word?
Oh, love.
What is your least favourite word?
Baggy.
I think we should bring it back. So what turns you on?
Really good facial hair.
What turns you off?
Inconsistency.
What sound or noise do you love?
My eldest niece's laugh.
What sound do you hate?
I hate lorries, you know, when they're collecting, like, trash from the street and they're being all noisy.
What's your favourite curse word?
Fuck.
What profession other than yours would you attempt?
Musician.
What profession would you not like to do?
Finance.
If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
You did a fucking incredible job.
That's good. Well, thank you very much, my darling.
Oh, I've loved this.
You've not got a tan despite the extreme.
It's really hot.